Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family garden.
That's Wausau's John McCutcheon getting us underway today, as he does each year about this time, for the annual Route 51 Garden Show. I'm Shereen Seewert. This week, it's our annual journey into the magical world of gardening as the weather warms and buds are forming on the trees. Soon, we'll be enjoying colorful flowers in our gardens and delicious fresh vegetables on our dinner tables. But that all takes work and careful planning, too. Joining me today are two gardening experts, Portage County Master Gardener Nick Schultz and Monk Gardens Horticulture and Grounds Manager Marissa Ashbeck. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
As always, our annual gardening show is focused on those of us in the inclement climate of the northern half of Wisconsin. So what would you like to know? If you've got gardening questions, this is the time to ask them. We encourage you to email questions to route51@wpr.org. You can also call us at 800-780-9742. Be sure to allow for plenty of time for our producer to answer your call. It may take longer than usual. Nick, let's start with you. Spring is always a little bit temperamental in north central Wisconsin. Of course, we just had that big cold snap last week. So did that cold snap push back the planting season in any way?
Well, if you had things planted, and I saw several people covering things through this last period, the soil temperature takes a while to warm up regardless. So a few cold days might slow it down a little bit, but generally most people in our area probably don't plant their tender crops until closer to Memorial Weekend. So we should be okay. And lettuce and peas and some of the spinach, the plants that can take a little cold, they'll be okay.
So Nick, is this this year's spring planting schedule, is it pretty much typical? I mean, is this about what we can normally expect?
Well, actually, the forecast is quite a bit warmer. The second half of May, to have temperatures in the 70s and up to 80 next week is unusual for May. So if you get it in, you're going to get some nice rain this weekend and some warm temperatures next week. That might make you want to consider doing something before Memorial Weekend.
Sure. Marissa, I hear a lot about garden zones, and I'm going to be really upfront with you both and just tell you that I am a novice when it comes to gardening. So forgive me if I ask questions that seem overly simple, but what does it mean to be in zone 3 or zone 4, and why does that all matter, Marissa?
So for cold hardiness zones, that's what it means when people say zone 4, zone 3. It's cold hardiness zone. So there's maps that you can find online and really anywhere in any almanacs and stuff like that. And you can see which region you're in. So basically towards the north, that's the lower numbers that we're in. And then towards the south, towards Florida and the equator more, you're going to have higher numbers in zones. So in Wausau, we're in zone 4. So, for example, there's two kind of sections in a zone, and it's A and B, kind of the high and low levels of the temperature ranges that we can tolerate, basically, or the plants can tolerate in this area. So, basically, in zone 4, our plants can take about negative 25-ish to about negative 30 to be able to survive the winters. So as we go more south into the state, you could be getting more into zone 5 and up north more towards zone 3.
Okay, so that's why it matters. But yep. What are some things I can plant outside right now? I know we talked a little bit about, Memorial Day weekend is kind of that marker, but Nick, what do you suggest? What can I plant right now that will that will be okay?
If you haven't already, you can certainly plant radishes, any kinds of lettuce or greens, including spinach and arugula, those kinds of things, peas. And I know Marissa can jump in here, too, because she worked with or has worked with a lot of vegetables.
What do you think, Marissa? I mean, when is it safe to plant those vegetables?
Yeah, so they're called cool crops or cool season crops. So a lot of the brassica family, so like your broccolis, cauliflowers, cabbages, kale, stuff like that, kind of with that waxier leaf, if you can remember that. Any of those can tolerate a lot of these cooler temperatures, along with like your onions and like garlic right now you can get in the ground because they can tolerate those cooler temperatures as well.
I know a lot of people don't have yards, or they don't have yards that are really, conducive to planting a garden. So for patio gardening, are there vegetables that are better suited to container gardening than others, perhaps?
Sure.
You can grow. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, you can grow almost anything in a container. Now, if you maybe with the exception of vine plants, and yet I would suggest you could probably do that too. I've seen some really great salsa gardens that are tomatoes and a little bit of pepper and maybe some cilantro, and it's in a pail. And as long as you're choosing varieties that don't get too tall, and you are diligent about your watering, you can grow almost anything in a container. Vine plants, I mean, say squash and cucumbers. Those are a little bit take more space, and so unless you an arbor might work to train them up, but almost anything can grow in a container.
Will Swiss chard grow up here?
Oh yes,
it will. Okay, yes. So there's no issue with that. What about soil? What's the best kind of soil to use in containers? Do I have to be careful about that? I mean, is there a specific mix, or will any old soil do?
I can take this one if you'd like, Nick. So basically, for a potting soil, you're going to want something that specifically, if you're going to be using it in containers, you want it to be light, and you want to be able to kind of move it if you have to, and you don't want it to be waterlogged. You want good drainage in it, basically. So you do want to try to find some sort of a potting mix that specifically says potting mix, because it's going to have the right mixture of peat moss versus coconut core versus rice hulls, perlite, or vermiculite in it. And it'll just keep that good drainage for you, and it'll also hold the moisture in when you need it as well.
Okay. And should I be dumping out the soil in the current containers every year, or should I start fresh? What's the best thing to do?
I would say you should start fresh, because your annuals, your veggies, anything in a pot are using all of those nutrients up that are in that soil during the previous year. So you want to rejuvenate that mix. Plus, if you let it dry out during the winter and get kind of crispy, it might not take in the water as well either.
Oh, good to know. Okay. Nick, what do you know about straw bale gardening? Somebody mentioned something about straw bale gardening to me, and I had no idea what they were talking about. And then I looked up, and it seems like it's kind of a thing. So are you familiar with it?
Yes, I am. I have not done it, but I know people who have loved it, and I know people who have been challenged by it. So straw bale gardening is essentially taking one or more. You can make it as many as you want, and you need to do a very prescribed regimen for like 20 days. Every day you either are adding fertilizer or watering your bales to create a bed for planting, and then you're ready to plant, and you get this really rich compost rich mix that is great for the for the at least one season. And you can plant on the top, you can plant on the sides. And so for those that have are limited with space, and also for those who may find the bending to be difficult, it brings it a little closer. So, it's a convenient way to get a lot of vegetables in a small space. There are resources. The gentleman who created it, his name is Joe Karcher. I'll see if I can put this on your Facebook page, that the author of the book who came up with it, and that could be a resource for you.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, for people who have a hard time kneeling for long periods of time, it sounds like maybe that might be a solution. Marissa, have you ever tried it, straw bale gardening?
I have not, but I have done just like raised beds before.
Okay. And, you know, speaking of raised beds, we've been talking about one in our yard. Does it have to be like, what's best? Should it be up on stilts? Should it just be just a plain old, you know, wood around a bunch of dirt? What's the best type of raised garden that works?
It's honestly all up to the user. There are some great, you know, self-watering raised beds that are on, you know, like legs or on wheels that you can put up on your deck if you don't have a yard that you can be putting a raised bed down on. But the wood-sided raised beds work just fine. And it's all in what you all want to grow as well and how much of it you want to do as well.
Okay. One question that we had gotten from a listener was about annuals for cutting and arranging. What are some of the best, what makes the best cut flowers, and where should they be planted?
Well, good cut flowers that come to mind for me are zinnias. That's often a late season flower or mid to late season. Dahlias are big and beautiful, and I think they can be really whatever. There's such a great variety of flowers depending on what you're interested in and like. Things with longer stems, cutting stems, make probably the best cut flowers, and most of them love sun.
Okay, and that's another question. So, are there any of these that don't need that full sun? If you have a shady area, what might you plant for a cutting flower that doesn't need that full sun? Marissa, do you know?
I'm trying to think here. You could use like coral bells. So they're going to be more of kind of a dainty stem to them. Delphinium can take some part sun if you can get those. And then if a lot of the shadier plants are going to be more of like a succulent branching, more of a succulent leaf, more foliage than anything. So you can add foliage from those shady plants, whether it's the coral bells, ferns would be cool in there. You can also use hosta flowers too in your arrangements as well. Of course, people with shade, you're not going to get as showy of flowers. I know it stinks.
Yeah, and I do want to ask you about some shade plant ideas in a little bit. Before we take a break, what's the best way to mulch a perennial bed? What do you recommend, Nick?
I recommend leaf mulch, and some people simply use compost. Others use bark mulch, but let me tell you why I don't recommend that. That's good for trees and shrubs. There are varying opinions about that, but generally you want your soil you want it to break down in a way that it enriches the soil and doesn't snuff out your plants. So I find just regular, just compost and leaf mulch that you have let degrade a little bit works as well as anything. And then you don't have to, it's not as expensive, and you don't have to replace it regularly. Cocoa bean mulch and some of those kinds of things that people like the look of, that certainly is a personal preference. If you love it, do it, but you don't need to.
What about grass clippings?
grass clippings. I would use those in my garden more to control the weeds in between your plantings, and then you're putting some nitrogen back in the soil with the grass clippings, and most vegetables often need that. It doesn't hurt to use that. It also doesn't hurt to use pine needles, depending on what your soil makeup is and whether you want something a little more acidic for what you're growing. For example, if you're growing blueberries or hydrangeas, something like that, or rhododendrons, those would all do well to have pine needles.
You're listening to Nick Schultz and Marissa Ashbeck, our guests today for our annual gardening show on Route 51. When we return, we'll answer some of your questions and find out what we should be planting now and what grows well in our region. Call us now at 800-780-9742. Be sure to let the phone ring long enough for us to answer. You can email questions as well, route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Siewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I went to a garden party, reminisced with my old friends, a chance to share old memories, play a song.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Siewert. Portage County Master Gardener Nick Schultz and Marissa Ashbeck from Monk Gardens in Wausau are here today for our annual gardening show, answering your questions and offering advice for the best possible results so that we're not sad. Email your questions to route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. Be sure to let that phone ring long enough for our producer to answer. So I live on Wausau South. Southeast side. There are a lot of tall trees here. I'm sure there are plenty of people who are in the same boat. We love the shade, but man, there are some challenges when planting is concerned. In our front beds, we have, what other than hostas can we put in those shady beds for some decorative color? Now, I know we talked a little bit about, you know, cut flowers, but not necessarily to have anything to cut. But just to have some color, other than hostas, what should I look for? Marissa, what do you think?
So there's actually some real beauties in the shade world. You know, you were saying not as many for those big cut flowers, but just for some beautiful foliage and beautiful smaller blossoms on them, you can go towards a stilbe. I think they're the most underused plant ever. They have a beautiful plume that's usually white, pinks, kind of purpley pinks, and burgundies on them. So a stilbe are great. Lungwort is also another one. It has fuzzy little speckled leaves that have spots on them, and then cute little like buttercup blossoms on them that are usually blues and pinks. Some other great ones would be bugbane or snake root, it's called, and they're going to get a little bigger for you, but they have some great purple, deep purple foliage for you and big white spike blossoms on them.
And then, that sounds nice.
Yeah, of course, there's ferns as well, and coral bells give you beautiful different foliage colors. So they're roundy-moundy little perennials that range in color from pinks to purples to oranges to lime green, and then they have kind of cousin plants that are called foamy bells or tiarella as well, and they have some great foliage colors too. Nick, do you have any suggestions as well?
Yeah, thank you. Those are terrific ones. And I would point out that the lungwort is resistant to deer and rabbits. So if you, as are most of the fuzzy leafed plants. So if that's an issue for you, a good one to keep in mind. For the spring blooming ones, Epimedium is one of my favorites. It's blooming really delicate flowers right now, heart-shaped leaves that turn red in fall and also open in, or red in spring. There's something called Virginia, which is has a nice pink flower early in spring. spring. In addition to the snake root, that blooms a little bit later, turtle head has a kind of a lavender pink flower, and it gets to be maybe 2 or 3 feet tall. So that's a nice one that takes you into fall. And also Ligularia has yellow flowers, and both of those are pretty substantial plants, again, 2 to 3 feet tall, and nice leaf structure as well as the flowers. So lots of choices. You're right.
Oh. Great ideas. What about vegetables? Are there any kinds of vegetables that can grow in shady areas? Besides the ones that we're used to putting in those full sunlight areas?
Most vegetables like sun. Some can take at least a little shade, but you'll have fewer disease problems and better yield in sun. Marissa, I'm going to turn this one over to you because I can't really think of any vegetables that will grow well in shade.
Yeah, and honestly, I would stay away from more of those heat of summer type of crops if you do try anything in shade. I'm thinking more of like your peas, your spinach, lettuce, stuff like that, that's going to do a little more, a little better in the shade. Because if you try to put like a bigger, more fruitful plant in the shade, yeah, you're going to get your stretching. There's going to be disease issues and just not the crop numbers that you want or the yield.
So do you think it's better to start vegetables from seed or buy young plants? Nick, what do you think? Does it depend on the vegetable or does it even matter?
It depends largely on the vegetable, but it also depends on how much you love to grow seeds. Now, in March, when you're so anxious to get outside and see something green and growing, starting seeds, even if you don't have great success, there's joy in that. So I would never dismiss it. Things like, and then if you need to start it that early, or can you just feed right into the ground? So some of the things that we talked about that you can already put in the ground easily come from seeds. Many people buy tomatoes and peppers as plants, and also some of the vining plants, your cucumbers and squash, because they take quite a bit longer to grow from seed. So if you don't want to start in February or mid-March and keep things going successfully, that is one way to get kind of a jump start on your vegetables.
Okay. What about grapes? Are there certain varieties of grapes that grow well in our area? I know a lot of people are interested in not just eating, but even, you know, making their own wine. Nick, what do you think?
I'm going to refer that one to Marissa if she can. I don't grow grapes, and so I'm afraid I'm not going to be real helpful on this one.
That's okay. Yeah. Marissa, what do you think?
A lot of the grapes in our area, people think that they can grow Concords here, and you really can't. So what grapes that work best in our area, most of them are going to have seeds. So I know it's kind of hard because you want to be able to eat them as table grapes, but a lot of people make juices and wines out of these. So some great varieties are Bluebell, Edelweiss, Swenson Red, and like Frontenac or Frontenac Gris. Those all grow in our area very well.
So shifting to fruit trees, in fact, yesterday my brother just planted a pear tree in his yard. So I had heard that you have to have at least 2 fruit trees in your yard for the trees to actually produce fruit. Is that the case?
So for the pears, yes, you're going to want 2 different varieties to get the most out of your crop, basically. So those 2 different varieties are going to be able to pollinate each other while they're blooming and then create a better fruit set for you. If someone in the area, if he knows of a neighbor kind of within a mile or 2 radius, has a pear tree, it might be able to cross-pollinate through all the bees and butterflies and everything. But So you're going to want those two varieties. Also, with plums, you're going to have two varieties as well, unless you get a self-pollinating variety like Stanley Prune Plum or Mount Royal. And then with apple trees, you can get two varieties as well. Otherwise, they will cross-pollinate with crab apples. So there's a lot of, you know, crab apples around in neighborhoods, so you might be able to get away with just one apple. And then most cherries, tart cherries in our area, are what we can grow usually. Usually they're self-pollinating, so you should be okay with that. And then apricots are another fruit tree, but you're going to need two varieties for those as well.
Are there specific fruit trees that we should avoid here that maybe won't thrive in this climate? What do you think? And Marissa, maybe you can answer this?
Yep. So I know it's tempting, but a lot of like big retail chains have out right now peach trees. I know. We all want them. Some do say that they're zoned for like contender peaches, and I can't remember the other variety right now, but they might market them as zone four, but they still might have some issues where they might die back from the branches because of the cold here, or they might bloom too early and the blooms freeze off. So just keep in mind, some of the stores, greenhouses, garden centers might try to trick us into believing that we can grow things here, but they might end up being more of a headache than anything.
Okay. Yeah. What about herbs? What are a must in your garden? Do you have any unconventional picks? What do you think about herbs?
I think all herbs are a must, even if you're only growing them for ornamental value. But many of us like to use them in for culinary purposes as well. The basil family has so many different varieties that are good for both eating and for show. Some of them have variegated leaves. Some of them are purple and have ruffles. And so definitely considered basil. Oregano, chives, are parsley. I use those on a regular basis. Rosemary, it smells so good. Even if you just walk by, I bring a bay plant in each fall to have fresh bay leaves. Marissa, what would you add to that list?
I personally love dill.
I love
making pickles and dilly beans and stuff like that.
What about lavender? I know lavender is so pretty and it smells so good, but and I guess some people use it in recipes too, yes?
Mm-hmm. They do, yes. Cookies and muffins often, or teas. Lavender can be challenging. The most hardy lavender in our area is the English lavender, and even that is listed as 5A. We talked about growing zones earlier. 5 would be along Lake Michigan and more the Madison area. There are two varieties that are the hardiest, one is Munstead, and the other one is, I think it's Hidcote, but I might not be saying it right, Hidcote. Those are the most reliably hardy. If you do plant it, try to put it in a protected area, and that will give you some added protection through the winter.
I've been seeing some beautiful ornamental shrubs in yards in the neighborhood, and I have no idea what they are. So what kind of ornamental shrubs do well here?
So if you're looking for spring bloomers, right now you're probably seeing those yellow flowers. So those are forsythia, and there's so many different varieties of those. Some of them get 12 feet tall, and some only get 3 feet tall. So there's some cool varieties of that one. The purple flowering shrubs that are just starting right now are most likely a rhododendron. So those are kind of an evergreen shrub. They keep their leaves over the winter, and they're great for shade as well. They can do great in shade. And there's some varieties that are older that are going to get that 4 to 5 feet, and some newer varieties that are 2 to 3 feet. So those are great too. And then azaleas are great for spring bloomers right now, whether you want the pinks, the purples, or the oranges. Those are going to be starting to blossom pretty soon here too. So do you want me to go through some summer bloomers?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Okay, so hydrangeas are one of my favorite. I know some people...
Oh, I love them. They're I think they're just beautiful.
Some people think, oh my gosh, they get so big though. Well, some varieties are coming out like Bobo and Little Lime. And there's an Invincible Wee series where it's like Invincible Wee White and Mini Mauvette, where they only get about 2 to 3 feet. So they're bringing out some really great options with the hydrangeas in all different colors, so they don't have to be that big shrub in your landscape. And then some other great shrubs for your foundation plantings are always spirea. They're bringing out some great varieties, and those are going to stay that 2 to 3 foot usually in nice roundy little moundy shrubs. And then nine bark are also great for their foliage color. Usually they're purples. There's varieties like Little Devil and Tiny Wine that are coming out, and they are nice, dense, compact shrubs as well, and they give you that color all season long. I could go on and on.
And if I could just add, those are all terrific suggestions, and if we think about the season-long value of shrubs, if you can find something that has bloom that is flowering in spring and then has great color in through summer, and then berries and or fruits for birds, and then also has fall color as their leaves turn, I think then that you're really getting the biggest value for each of those different seasons. Some of the nine barks that and some of the ones that Marissa already suggested are good. I would also add to that list chokeberry. It is one that's awesome for that, and so are several of the dogwoods. They have, and I know some people are like, oh no, I can't do dogwood, it spreads too much. But there are varieties that are a little tamer, and there are small trees like a pagoda dogwood. It is, and also anything in the viburnum family gives you those spring blooms, and then the fruit for birds later in the season and great fall color.
So what about cutting back perennials? Is that something that should be done in the spring, or should that be done in the fall?
So the way I see it is it's all kind of personal preference. If you want to get all of your work done in fall, that's great. And you're kind of getting that leaf debris out of there, so there's not going to be harboring insects or disease. But if you want to leave up your perennials during the winter for the birds to peck at and the wildlife to benefit, and it gives you something to look at during the wintertime. It might be brown, but it's something to look at. Or if it has berries on it, they can be beautiful in the snow. So there is benefits to both of them, but it's honestly more towards your personal preference. That's what I think. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, it is a personal preference. I agree. One other consideration besides, I think it's, my husband and I go back and forth on this too, because he would prefer to clear out a lot, and I like to keep some of it up just because I think it's so pretty how the snow falls on it in the winter. One thing to keep in mind if you are interested in some of the how our wildlife live over winter, like the stems of some perennials, if you cut them down, just still leave them in the yard if you can, or find a place to leave them, because that's where many of the insects will overwinter. So that we want them to come back and pollinate in this season. So let's keep them there if we can.
All right. I have a question about watering. Some people have their you know, these spraying every day. How often do I really need to water?
Once a week.
Yeah. Yep.
if it hasn't rained once a week, give it a
once
deep
a
watering once a week would be my recommendation. Marissa, would you add?
Yeah, it's all really dependent on your soil, too. Like, if you have a nice, like, loamy soil, it's going to hold your moisture much better. But if you have more of a sandy soil, the water might go and filter through that a little quicker. But if you have nice established plants, they shouldn't need water all the time. If you water them every day, you're kind of babying them along. Your potted plants are going to need water more. But if things are in the ground, yeah, I would stay a little laxed on the watering because you want them to really root in and search for that water as well.
You're listening to Nick Schultz and Marissa Ashbeck, our guests today for our annual gardening show on Route 51. When we return, we'll delve into some troubleshooting and talk about some effective pest control and weed control as well. Call us now at 800-780-9742 and be sure to let the phone ring long enough for us to answer. You can email questions as well to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's go!
See that watermelon hanging on the vine? I wish that watermelon could be mine. The farmer must be careless without a lick of sense, or he wouldn't leave it hanging on the vine. Cornbread is sweet, pork chops are good, black-eyed peas are mighty, mighty fine. But give me, oh give me, I really wish you would, that watermelon hanging on the vine.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Portage County Master Gardener Nick Schultz and Marissa Ashbeck from Monk Gardens in Wausau are here today for our annual gardening show. Your questions are welcome. Email route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. I've got to say, you know, children, you want to get them interested in gardening right away. So do you have any suggestions to help encourage children to enjoy gardening? What do you think, Marissa?
So really just have them get involved, get their hands in the dirt. If you can start those seeds where they actually put that seed in the ground and watch it start to sprout, it's going to be great. And if they can see that that flower turns into that fruit and have them actively harvesting with you, have them help you weed in the garden, it's all going to kind of spark that interest, and it's going to make them realize, you know, where food comes from, what flowers do, and just how plants kind of live and what they require to live. So I think just getting them out in the garden and introducing them to things is the best way to get them interested.
It's like a science experiment, getting them out there and teaching them all kinds of things. So that's wonderful. I want to talk a little bit about some troubleshooting. Emerald ash borer, very nasty pest. We still have an ash tree in our front yard. So did the cold temperatures this winter kill them off? Do we still need to worry about this? I mean, is this still an issue?
It is, and it will continue to be probably more so as they continue to spread through the state. There, you can treat for it depending on the size of your tree. It's often best to work with an arborist on something like that, because typically the biggest trees are the ones we're saving, and that if the treatment generally is injection into the ground around the root base. So yes. Yeah, that is one of several pests that have affected our trees. I know Marissa has a lot of experience with trees as well.
Yeah, it's, again, the ongoing process. And we had almost, I know you don't think so, but it was almost like a mild winter. So it didn't kill off too many pests like we wanted.
Julie in Wausau had a question about weeds. What is a good natural way to get rid of weeds? Or is there one?
Well, pulling them would probably be the best natural way.
But there's no like there's no magic spray other that you can use to get rid of weeds other than that.
So we talked about mulch earlier. One of the best ways to keep weeds from sprouting is by limiting what they need, which is sunlight and other nutrients, you know, to grow. So if you can put mulch around the plants you want to keep as soon as possible, you're going to snuff out those weeds. So you don't, and if you have to pull them, you're at least pulling fewer of them. So that ends up being a really good organic control.
Okay. I have dogs. I know a lot of people have dogs. As a result, my backyard looks like a big patchy mess. I have read that less lawn is better. A group of friends and I were talking about this yesterday. Is less lawn better? So what are some things we could do? Should we embrace some larger grasses, some prairie grasses, or is there something, some plants that we can use that are more hardy when we have animals tramping on our lawns?
Definitely. If you wanted to create a little backyard prairie, you know, you could still have your lawn back there, but you could pull your beds outward, you know, make them a little bigger. Get some of those larger prairie plants to establish in there, like your big blue stem grasses, your switch grasses, prairie drop seed. You could incorporate coneflowers, black-eyed Susans, and a lot of other native flowering plants that could really benefit your pollinators, your birds, and you all, you know, season long, and create a habitat for the wildlife. So it's honestly, you can, you know, reduce your lawn, no problem. And if there's a mowing issue too, there's also like no-mow grass seed available that you can establish where you don't even have to mow. It only grows to a certain height.
Really? I've never heard of that. That's interesting. These plants that you're talking about in those areas, is that something that you should put seed down, or is that actually, you know, you're planting those plants right into the ground?
Either or. You can get seed mixtures from different plant nurseries or seed producers. There's a lot of native species and native nurseries online that you can find them. Also, you can do plugs, so they're just little baby versions of the plants if you're doing a large section of it. Otherwise, you can find at your local greenhouses and nurseries a lot of the time. They will have like gallon sizes or larger sometimes, or a little smaller, like quart sizes as well.
Okay. What about those Asiatic lily beetles that we've been seeing? What can we do about those beetles?
Just anecdotally, I will tell you that I saw my first one. So it's the lily leaf beetle. It's bright red, so it's very easy to see. I saw my first one this season before any of my lilies were even out of the ground. So one of the best ways to deal with them is just to be watching for them early on and just check your plants, drop them in soapy water, pick them off and drop them into soapy water and try to get them before they start to lay their eggs on the undersides of leaves, because that's really where you get your greatest defoliation. So that's the same regimen that you'd follow for picking Japanese beetles.
Sure. They're just nasty little buggers, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't fly. They don't, if you do it later in the day, they don't fly away. I mean, if you get past being grossed out by them, you know, just pick them.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about tomatoes. So many people growing tomatoes, but what is tomato blight and how can that be prevented?
So tomato blight is a fungus, and it lingers in your soil. So you can try to treat it with like a systemic fungicide in your soil. And so the fungus spores are living in the soil. And then once your plants are planted and it rains, and when they're sporulating, it's called, or spreading those spores, raindrops bounce up and hit that plant, and it's spreading to that plant once again. So you can try to treat with a fungicide. Otherwise, people try to clip off your bottom leaves of your tomato plants and try to get them off the ground, because that's how they're kind of contaminating each other too. And it's a lot because of, we've had some wet, wet growing seasons around here too. So it's spreading like wildfire through the tomatoes that way. And you can try to find resistant varieties as well. So there's a couple different options, but I think it's a battle that we're always going to be fighting.
I know that heritage tomatoes sometimes have a tendency to burst open. Is there a way to prevent that?
Do you know about that one, Nick?
Right. So sometimes they, if it's irregular watering, which is very difficult to control if it's rainfall that's creating that. Beyond what you can control with watering, I would suggest that, and this would apply to preventing late blight and other diseases as well, try to water from underneath the plant, so at the ground level, or whether you're sprinkling or doing it rather than an overhead sprinkler, use water that doesn't go on the plant, and I think you'll have better luck that way.
Okay, and what about apple trees? So we have an apple tree; it produces a ton of apples, but they're always discolored in spots. Always. So what causes that? Is it a problem?
So is it like little black kind of scabby portions?
Like brown, just, okay. Yeah, it's just brown spots. It's not like rot. We can still use them, but they just don't look right.
It could be some sort of an insect that's getting in there. So some people try to spray their trees in early spring, and you have to do it at certain bud stages. Apple trees, it's very specific on when you can spray it to be effective and not to hurt the pollinators. So that's a little tricky that way with orchard sprays. But you could also concoct kind of like you take a milk jug and you put in like vinegar and like a banana peel. It's a weird kind of recipe, but it attracts all the bad bugs in there.
Okay.
I use that. Yes, it's a little bit of vinegar and the banana peel and water, right?
Yep.
Cider vinegar, I believe.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, what about rabbits and deer? Are there some good ways to keep them out of the garden? It's always a problem. It's always a problem.
Yeah, fences are, you know, probably the one sure thing. And then they need to be tall enough for deer. There are some sprays you can use. Most and rather than citing any specific brand name, most of, or you can mix your own hot, either some combination of hot pepper and egg. It's the smell and the taste that will repel them. So then spraying it on your plants and starting early, if they're after your hostas, try to spray your hostas as they're coming out of the ground or before they timed just when your daylilies are about to bloom. That's when they go after them. So just make sure you're using things like that. That's what I have found to be most effective, and to plant things that they don't favor. After you lose things a few times, I don't want to lose things more than three times. That's my limit. So then
sure.
Seems
reasonable.
One very brief
question. How often do you recommend fertilizing? How often should we do that?
So for annuals, I would do every 7 to 14 days, depending on how much of a regimen you want to do and how much of a concentration you use. But honestly, if you want to do your lawns, your perennial shrubs, only about once a year is necessary because they're really going to grow by themselves.
All right. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Thanks so much to our guests, Nick Schultz and Marissa Ashbeck. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today from John McCutcheon, Ricky Nelson, The Beatles, Tennessee Ernie Ford, and John Denver. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll feature our quarterly state legislative roundup with Republican State Representative Pat Snyder and Democratic State Representative Katrina Shankland. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
Inch by inch, row by row.